This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Welcome to Barron's Live Market Watch Edition. I'm Rachel Koning Beals, climate change reporter at Market Watch, and I'm pleased today to welcome Peter Klein, Align Wealth's Chief Investment Officer and founder. Welcome, Peter. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Rachel. Pleasure. I look forward.
We're going to dig into water in a matter of seconds, but just a bit at the top here about the investing philosophy at Align. Tell us just a bit about Align.
Align Wealth is focused on the fiduciary relationship with our clients, putting their interests first and second and third. It's very much part of our culture and our DNA. We're stewards of our clients' capital and their legacies going forward. We do this through a very defined process, combining investment knowledge and research with portfolio management and really, you know, caring for our clients in a financial planning centric firm.
Great. All right. The reason we're here today, water, how to invest in it. You and a lot of investors are paying close attention to the infrastructure bill being hammered out. There's a budget bill also being hammered out in Congress, which as of today still has some spending tagged for water infrastructure. At least in a Senate version, Congress would commit something like $55 billion to clean drinking water, including lead pipe replacement. Of course, we're waiting on final legislation, and some water projects were included in a transportation bill this summer. Do you, Peter, think the Biden administration and Congress are doing enough when it comes to water in the U.S.?
Well, you know, let me say this, and thank you so much for having us today, having me today. I think the infrastructure bill demonstrates the need, the dire need of infrastructure in the United States, and especially in that water sector, right? And why water? You know, that's why we're here today, because it has been a can that has been kicked down the proverbial road for decades, be it on the federal level, as well as the state level. Elected officials have not stepped up on this issue as much as we believe that they should have. That's the nature of long-term projects like infrastructure, right? I mean, you know, you don't get the short-term, you know, sort of win if you're an elected official on something like infrastructure. It takes a long time for you to see the benefits. But it's clear now. It's clear now that citizens, voters, right, they see it as a right, something that has always been there, access to clean, safe water when they want it. And frankly, it's nearly for free. I think that part might be changing a little bit. We'll talk about that. But bottom line is, today, with the drought conditions out west, we'll talk about that, the post-Flint, Michigan period, and of course, the need for food as the world's population continues to grow, all of this is coming together right now. And now is the time. And now is we need to get this done. So water, as you know, has no substitutes. There's an increasing demand and supply is constrained. So the last thing we need is bad infrastructure. It's leaking this precious commodity out and wasting it.
Do you think the amounts that we're talking about or the sort of impetus, is that just catching up to delayed maintenance or is there a mandate? Is there spending meant to advance infrastructure?
I think it's a combination of both, right, Rachel? I mean, it's delayed maintenance kind of thing. And some of these water infrastructure pipes and systems in the Eastern Seaboard, older cities, if you will, New York, Philly, et cetera. I mean, some of these are like wood. I've heard stories where they're afraid to shut them down to fix them because they're basically band-aided to death, you know? And mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of, you know, there's a fair amount of that too. I mean, it's I think the Civil Engineering Association of America gave our water infrastructure a C- or something, damn close to failing. So we've got, there are issues. Now, add to that climate change, storms, storm surges, right? And the need, we just saw that a few weeks ago on Labor Day weekend with that big storm. We need to make sure that we have the infrastructure that can push that, you know, and take that water from where it is to where it needs to go. And is it 55, you know, or is it 50 or is it 52 billion? I don't, the current bill, it's a lot, right? It's a lot of money going down there. It may get watered, excuse the pun, watered down a little bit as the back and forth in DC continues. But I think the bottom line here is that it's a great deal of capital and it highlights the importance of water infrastructure, which I think will now beget more investment and more capital allocation, which is how this cycle is funded.
It, you've been tracking water for 15 years. So obviously infrastructure is a piece of it, but it's you were already onto the theme. Does Washington's attention on water just add to your kind of bullish view of the sector as far as investing in saving U.S. water?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the way I got involved in water, it's a bit of a funny story. I was doing some typical, you know, research that folks like I do, analysts and strategists and financial advisors. And I was looking at companies that outperformed the average S&P over 10 years. It must have been the 90s or 95 to 05, something like that. And I noticed, you know, there were the typical names you would expect to have been there back then, the ones that were the more, you know, sort of the darlings of Wall Street, right? But there was a handful of companies that I never heard of before, that I wasn't aware of. This is 15, 20 years ago. And so I started digging into these companies. I'm like, well, why do I know these companies? And it was interesting that all of them were essentially water utilities, basically water utilities that did very, very well. And no one knew about it because it was something that they are felt self-funded and they're not very, they, at the time they weren't in the investors' mainframe, you know, viewpoint. And clearly that's changed, thankfully. And I think that the infrastructure spending would only increase my interest in the sector. I'm still very much a water investor.
Got it. So this is what our listeners really want to hear. What does it mean when we say to invest in water? What themes, what sectors, what, I mean, water itself is a sector, sure, but what are we talking about? What companies are the way, and I know you can't name necessarily specific stock picks, but just thematically kind of get us there. How does one invest in water?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of pieces to this mosaic, right? So we have you know, the utility sector as part of the deliverers of water, right? And that's a robust sector within the overall water sector. But then you also have companies that do testing, companies that do metering. They're doing wireless metering now. Fantastic option that allows a lot more ability for companies to understand the usage of water and frankly, you know, charge for it appropriately, which I think is another piece of this puzzle. And then you also have desalinization, you have treatment, you have testing companies. So it's a fairly wide, you know, spectrum of sectors within water. But the basic bottom line is this is an essential commodity. You cannot live without it. Climate change increases its security risks. And of course, you know, it's essential for food production and also manufacturing. And it's really interesting how much water goes into manufacturing sectors, including semiconductor manufacturing.
Yeah. I want to remind our listeners, you can submit questions in the chat Q&A that's part of the broadcast here. And then some listeners did ask a few things ahead of time. Brian wants to know, what is the fallout if no bill is passed? Now, I guess you and I sort of talked about that a little bit, about your sort of long run view of water. Are you're not hanging your hat totally on whether or not there's infrastructure, right? Or are you?
No, I'm not. You're right. I mean, if it's 50 or 55 or slightly less, or maybe it doesn't even get done. I mean, I doubt that. But I think this is now showing that the country and maybe even the world over time is dedicated to water infrastructure and the importance of upping our game, which makes me, you know, if you look at the bill, interestingly, I think it's either number two or number three most dedicated part to this bill is water. So it's significant, and it's sending a message that is this stuff, this liquid that we take for granted, is scarce and getting scarcer. It needs to be fixed. Less leakage, more ability to handle. Again, I mentioned the storm surges, better testing, treatment, even metering. Now, with respect to treatment, here's a little bit of inside baseball for you here. On the treatment side, I noticed that the EPA is becoming more focused on this little pesky chemical that's in our water supplies. It goes by the mnemonic PFAS. It's polyfluorocarbolefins, a chemical coating that's ubiquitous in our society for years, decades, from Scotch Guard products to waterproofing agents, to firefighting foam. All of this PFAS is in there, nonstick products, right? Those kind of things on pans and such, the liners of ski jackets, you know, that kind of, these chemicals, you see, are resistant due to their chemical makeup to water. That is, they don't break down like many other chemicals do. So they stay in our system. And in fact, they stay in our body for years. EPA has been well aware of this for years, but action plans now, sweeping legislation, which has been absent for years, we see that now changing, and that we think this issue might be. Now, think about it from, you know, besides the, you know, the improvement of health potentially, but also a revenue cash cow, cash flow generator for the companies that are involved in its remediation. So we think this could be a real interesting nuance to the water treatment sector.
Gotcha. Abby wondered, how does someone new to investing in water get started? And I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about funds. I know we don't really want to pin you down on a position here, but do water funds exist? And, is a fund, in fact, somewhere for a new person, a person new to water to get started?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's both index ETFs, you know, there's a couple of organizations that develop water indices, and there's a couple of ETFs that mimic those, both domestically and globally. There's a couple of mutual funds that are focused on water. So I think that's a viable option. You know, I mean, again, they're diversified. Now you got to make sure you understand, like anything else that we do and invest, we got to understand what we're buying, right? So we want to dig into that. That index fund, that ETF, or that mutual fund to get a sense on what their take is on the, you know, they may be all utility and no infrastructure, let's say, or they may be, you know, focused on one sector of the water, sector. But I tend to think it's, from what I've noticed, it's fairly well diversified. And I think it's a great way for someone to start and get their proverbial toe wet.
Yeah, second point. I was hoping you'd go there. That's great. You mentioned utilities, water utilities a little bit. Allow me, please, to drill down on that a little bit. There's a lot of reasons an investor might round out a portfolio with a utility in general, right? They're dividend paying usually. Talk about water utilities and, you know, kind of what you like about them generally right now, and, mm-hmm. and what investors might ask themselves when it comes to water utilities.
Sure. Utilities are real interesting now, because if you consider it from our broad macro take on a potential increasing inflation, at least for the next couple of years, that's our sort of macro take, at least one of them. Well, you want to invest in companies and sectors that are able to have pricing power, right? That could pass along increasing costs that they're bearing to run their business to their consumers who utilize their products and services. Well, that's what a utility does. So before I get into water, I just want to make that sort of comment that utilities are interesting, from that perspective. But so with the water sector, you know, we have this water being delivered through a system of pipes and treatment plants, and this water gets delivered to homes and businesses around the world, around the nation. And again, other countries have it very similar. The first thing you need to understand is that in the United States, it's a very fragmented industry. There are approximately 50,000 small mom and pop water districts, usually owned by a small enterprise or family or even a community or county. So it's very fragmented. Well, it is this fragmentation of the industry that an investment opportunity is born, right? Because these smaller entities are finding it difficult, increasingly difficult, to effectively manage their community's needs, given their aging infrastructure, and of course, their increased testing regulations, and of course, you know, you have climate change, right? So these smaller entities do not have the access to capital as larger utilities do. And so we've seen, and we're likely to see more of this in the future, consolidation in this water utility sector. And so that the larger companies can make the needed investments in infrastructure, and they have the, you know, they have the size and depth to do that. They will go to their state's public utility commission, and they will seek increased revenues or rates for the investments they've made. That's how that process works. So I think it's a very interesting one. You know, companies supplying these utilities with the needed infrastructure services and solutions is certainly a theme there, right? Because if you're the utility and you're buying and you need to take care of that infrastructure, you're the custodian of that all important infrastructure, you need to invest in it. And those companies that fix and repair and make and make it more efficient are critical partners to you in that. So, yeah, it's real interesting. I think you're going to see the water bill you get in your house every few months, which is probably not your most concerning bill you get. I think you're going to start seeing that go up, and it already has. Mm-hmm. So, I think you're going to start seeing more focus on water.
Got it. Well, or lack of water, which is the Western drought right now, right? So at one point in the late summer, more than 93% of the Western U.S. was in drought. Drought's not new. We certainly cycle in and out of droughts, but the breadth of the territory and the reasons why, reduced snowpack for starters, have created a real crisis, according to most analysis. I don't think we're going to stop talking about this. So a couple of things for you, Peter. How do you translate the crisis of a drought into investment opportunities? And I wonder too, when it is something that's sort of weather related and climate related and a lot of uncertainty, how should that make investors feel? I mean, is it, I guess ostensibly you'd think stay away from such volatility, but you might argue, being part of the solution helps take care of volatility. So help us connect drought to investing in water.
Yeah, sure. Of course. And again, I'm sorry that legal and compliance regulations prohibit me from actually mentioning individual stocks, but we'll frame these discussions via sectors. So, So let's talk about the drought conditions out west. I just came back from a trip down the central coast of California. So arid, so dry. I mean, you look out your window and you notice it. Everything is just arid and brown. Dams and reservoirs are at low, very low, dangerous positions. And consider that food is produced by the U.S. in the U.S. in that area. So you need water to grow food and pigs and cattle and chickens. So there's a lot of sort of tributaries that could come out of this that are impactful and important to sort of think about. Now, you have global warming, climate change, which has impacted the water supply chain, as you mentioned. I don't know if that's changing anytime soon. I don't think we're going to wake up one day and have climate change fixed. So I suspect we're going to be learning, seeing more of these drought-like episodes than less of them. And to your point, how do we as investors and allocators of capital sort of look at that? And one way is to sort of think about some of the technologies. Well, of course, first off is better infrastructure, less leakage, more, protecting what we have. That's number one. I mean, so that's number one, investing in the infrastructure. But also, we got to start thinking about where to get more supply from. If we're not going to have the big snowpacks that feed the rivers, that feed the valleys, well, what are we, you're not going to magically snap your fingers and get water. So we have to figure out some of the other ways that maybe we can access water. And I mean, you know where I'm going. I'm going to desal, which is extremely interesting. Imagine taking water, seawater, salt water, going through a process, and then boom, you got water. Problem solved. You got plenty of ocean water. You just don't have potable water. You don't have, fresh water. That's no easy task. Desalinization is very energy centric and it is costly to build and manage. Israel, interestingly, I guess they have really little choice because they really needed to access. They figured it out to some degree better than most how to do that. So that's there is some good technology coming out on desalinization. And I think San Diego has a big desal plant as well. So that might end up being something that investors may want to consider as we move forward.
Norm wrote in, he had a question about it. In fact, so you're smart to hit on that. Our listeners are wondering. Norm wondered about desalination progress, growth, even within the next 5 years. Is that a timeline that's reasonable? What do you think about that kind of a timeline?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, listen, that's spot on. We need to figure this out. We just can't turn a blind eye and say it'll just get better. And hopefully it will. I don't know. It just seems to me like we're going to be drier and hotter and more populated. And all of those things make water, scarcer. And so I think you're spot on with that. Focusing on desalinization technologies. And I'm not suggesting it's going to be something that can be fixed short term, but certainly something we should be looking into as an investment opportunity for the longer term.
Great. Brett wrote in, this was interesting. I hadn't even thought quite about this, so I'm glad Brett did, especially when we're talking about the Western U.S. This is a nation built in a lot of respects on individual property ownership, and there are ranchers, and there are a lot of competing interests, I guess, when it comes to water usage all over, but in the West in particular. Do you have any opinion on just, I guess, the notion of property, individual property rights versus, broader interest? And does that impact, I guess, how you look at water investment?
Yeah, water rights are real interesting. I did some work on those years ago. Fascinating how it all came about. So the way I recall it, and I haven't dug into it recently, but west of the Mississippi has one set of laws with respect to water rights, and east of the Mississippi has another. And I think the east of the Mississippi, our area here in New York, is more of a state, county kind of ownership deal. Whereas on the western portion, and there's been movies and programs about this forever, but I think the western, it's more of the person that owns that land. That's his water rights. And so it gets very dicey where they start trading these rights. Okay, you need it down the river bend. All right, I'll sell you some of my water. It becomes real interesting in the Western United States and how that all plays in. And forgive me, I don't have all the figures in front of me, but that is something that needs to be addressed. I'm not sure how best to do that. I'll leave it to others who are more policy geeks and wonks on that. But yeah, I think that is something that we need to look at because, there are cities that say that water is mine. And then there's valleys that say, hey, we need that water to feed people. So who gets it? The city or the farmer. And if the farmer's going to pay more for it to entice the city to give them their flow, well, what's that going to do to food inflation? Right. So this is what I'm talking about this sort of this virtuous cycle, this feedback loop, which can get very dire. We have less water, less growing, less more population, less food for that growing population because there's less water to grow the food. You see where I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. that leads us to our next, my next question, which is just kind of on consumer behavior around water, established over decades, centuries of behavior almost. It's, we have a water bill. It's not that our water is free quite, but it sort of is. I walk around and I drink water out of a water fountain, no problem, right? Do you think as consumers, and then ultimately that impacts investors because investors invest in consumer behavior, right? Do you think we'll have to start thinking about, we'll be forced to or want to start thinking about water as a scarcer resource than we currently do? You would offer, when we talked recently, you suggested this image, consumers, you know, walking around and tapping our cash card on a drinking fountain to fill our reusable canister, sort of no more water fountains, if you right. will. Talk about consumers and water.
Yeah, no more free water fountains, right? I mean, yeah, I think it's going to be, there'll be plenty of these filling stations. But so, yeah, you know, let me start off with this and ask a question, I guess. I mean, I guess the audience could opine, but how many people really shut the water off when they're brushing their teeth? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know it's the right thing to do, but it's been sort of built into us that we just let it run because who cares about water? Water is free. Everyone got water. Water, who cares? Now we have to start caring, guys. It's been too far too long. In fact, philanthropically, on a side note, I've been involved in an initiative to show young kids, to teach young, you know, five-year-olds, kindergarten, first grade, the importance of when they brush their teeth to shut that water off. And you have little cute cartoons that could save the aquifer and that kind of thing. It's important to teach a young kid so they could teach their parents and they could learn over the lifetime, their lifetime as well. But the point is, water is scarce and we've got to start treating it that way. And to your point, what I mentioned to you when we spoke last week about those filling stations, I see them in airports now too. You can take mm-hmm. your reusable canister, you know, your container, go to there, boom, fill it up, and then you go, wait, no plastic. Perfect. That's not gonna be free much longer. I think you're gonna start seeing little credit card machines or scanners to sort of say, okay, a dollar, fill it up, you know, that kind of thing. But watch for that. It'll be interesting. I think there is something to this this notion that we've got to be more, as consumers, more aware that while free or close to it, water should be cared for carefully and respected for what it is, a critical resource that we can no longer waste. Now, for the stock market, you'll have companies that, you know, are existing and focusing on the importance of pricing water. But that's no easy task, right? How do you do that? How do you price something? Now, you know, the metering companies, the metering sectors, what they've done is they've now started using wireless metering. So that has been a much better way for these companies to understand and utilities to understand how much is being used and how much is being wasted. And then, of course, how much to charge for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan wanted to know, Peter, can you, and sorry to put you on the spot, but I like the way our audience is thinking. They're just really thinking about all these different approaches. He wants to know, can you, Peter, address current water storage methods and evaporation risks from those methods?
You know, it's something, it's interesting. I haven't looked into that, David, but that is intriguing. Because you're right, if we're able to somehow harness these huge water surges, treat it, store it effectively and efficiently, that could certainly be, you know, in a case, I guess that's what we do with reservoirs, right? The problem is that there was so little water out west that those reservoirs are being depleted. In the eastern part of the U.S., which is less dry, we've had, you know, these major storms over the last few years. It'd be interesting to see if there's a way to sort of capture and store that, you know, stormwater and see if it could be, you know, it certainly could be treated and utilized. So, you know, it's a lot of things. You know, how about these sensors that are on, that should be on sprinkler systems? You know, I drive up and down my area here on Long Island, and I'm sure in other suburban office parks and commercial areas, it could be raining cats and dogs outside and the sprinklers are going. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It drives me crazy. So, you know, and that's the, and that's not that difficult of a fix. You could have a sensor and that goes right to your system. And when it's, you know, when it detects rain, it shuts off. So we need to be aware of this. We need to be more aware of the importance of water in our society.
Yeah. Derek has a great question for a couple of reasons. I'm going to read it in a second, but I like that he's introducing technology and really kind of forward thinking with his question. And it raises a little bit of ethical considerations. It's this, Derek, he says, not that I'm in favor of playing with nature, but does cloud seeding ever become a factor in resolving droughts? Who controls that? Corporations or government? So Peter, maybe you know a little or a lot about cloud seeding, but I really like the, where this is going. Who, you know, when these are kind of out there ideas, who leads on that, private sector or public sector? And are there ethical considerations sometimes too?
This certainly is, you know, I mean, you could start having these things where, you know, very super wealthy people could control when it rains and when it doesn't. So it could get dicey. So I think there's got to be regulations involved with that. Cloud seeding is something I'm aware of, and it's interesting, and certainly something that would help in some part some of the drought alleviation. However, you need clouds in order to get the seeding to get the rain, right? So if you get these cloudless skies, as I saw when I was in California, it's not a cloud in sight. So, I mean, that sort of brings us back to the same question of, you know, how we're going to, you know, get water to where it needs to be. But I think his point's well taken. There are ethical considerations here. And perhaps what will be needed to be done would be some kind of world global water council that sets these types of, you know, these types of policies, you know, for countries and nations to sort of consider. So that might be one way to get through this, but clearly there will be a need for both the private, public, and sector to work together, and the philanthropic sector too. I mean, that's certainly one that I'm well aware of, and one that has water in front of them, and many private foundations are working very diligently in trying to make impact there.
Yeah. All right. Last question. Thanks for hanging in with us. I wondered it, and one of our listeners, Michael, wondered too. We hear a lot about ESG, environmental, social, governance, investing, climate change type, you know, thinking is a big part of that. I wondered, and our listener kind of wondered, is water in a way of more of a quote-unquote pure play when it comes to ESG that might help you avoid greenwashing? And I guess by that, I mean, we're hearing a lot of like carbon pledges and emissions pledges. Companies may or may not meet those. Is water a little more transparent maybe when it comes to ESG?
I would say definitively. I would say it is the purest play. I mean, if you think about it, you can't live without it, and there's no substitute for it. So, but let's back up. Let's back up on ESG. Mm-hmm. Investors know what it is, of course. It's a lens through which one analyzes an investment seeking telltale signs of long-term, durable, and sustainable cash flows, right? So think of it as like other metrics we use when we analyze the fundamentals of a security. Back in business school, our finance professors taught us about financial analysis, and during a CFA process, we learn about valuing a security. Well, we'll still use those tenets in analyzing a security, but with ESG now, we have a new set, an additional set, not an only set, an additional set of metrics and to consider. So how is the company thinking about their cash flows in the future? How will they be protected from the impact of climate change or social justice reform? Or how are they looking at their board and their representatives along the lines of diversity and long-term planning and having, you know, equal gender in the boardroom? So in the governance. So a lot of these things are in that lens. But green and greenwashing for those who are who don't know about it, somewhat of a new term. I mean, it's probably a couple, maybe a year or two old. It's basically when companies are faking it, right? Actually fabricating the nerd, you know, fabricating their ESG bona fides to make them look more green or sensitive to ESG than they really are. And why do they do this? Because they think they're going to get a bit of a, you know, sort of a premium for their, you know, for their company or stock or something like that because of this. You know, investors will see through that. You know, they'll see that, right? You do your due diligence. You read on the company. You do the work that we do. You'll find those companies that are just faking it.
I lied, but for our listener Fred had a good follow up because we did cover. I lied about that being the last question. So one more quick one. Fred wanted to follow up, and since we did spend quite a bit of time talking about utilities, let's help Fred here. He wanted to know, wait, aren't many water utilities municipal or state run? And you're saying, no, there are private sector investment opportunities in water utilities, right?
Yes, there's about maybe a handful, 8 or 9 of these major publicly traded water utilities. But he's right. Most of them are mom and pop, municipal, you know, county run. And that's where the opportunity is for the what I think, you know, the fragmented sector to be more consolidated, which only makes those, which continues to give growth trajectory to those publicly held utilities.
Gotcha. Well, let's wrap it there. We had a lot of interest. It's exciting for me to read all these questions from our listeners. People are very, very interested in water, Peter. So that's good news to you too, I'm sure. I wanted to say thanks for being here, Peter.
And happy to be a resource. Yep.
Excellent. And we hope everyone listens in tomorrow, same time. Barron's Senior Managing Editor, Lauren Rublin, and healthcare industry reporter, Josh Nathan Kazis, discuss what's new in healthcare investing, and they'll provide an update on COVID-19 treatment and vaccines. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.
Take care.